strength in numbers. Find other women or other men who will back you up and give you moral support as you try to take this on in the workplace.
All right. Well, we want to thank you so much, Jane Slaughter, for speaking with us. You write for Labor Notes. In fact, your most recent piece, I believe, is No Casting Couch for Low-Wage Women, But Lots of Sexual Harassment. That was in Labor Notes. And we thank you for joining us on Flashpoints.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Coming up at 11:30, the film show presents part two of its direct cinema special with one of the pioneers of the documentary film movement, Frederick Wiseman. But next, it's Between the Covers with author Deborah Reed discussing her new book, The Days When Birds Come Back. KBOO keeps you informed and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
Carrie from the Oregon Cultural Trust, Oregon's unique engine for funding culture, including KBOO Radio. Oregonians can double the love for culture by making a donation to the Cultural Trust before December 31st that matches the donation they made to KBOO or one of more than 1,400 arts, heritage, or humanities organizations across the state. At tax time, the donation to the Cultural Trust is refunded via Oregon's Cultural Tax Credit. Donors double their impact at no cost to them, and culture across the state wins big. Visit culturaltrust.org to learn more.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I need mine.
That's what I want.
That's what I want.
That's what I want.
That's what I want.
That's what I
want.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
Deborah Reed is the author of four novels, Carry Yourself Back to Me, Things We Set on Fire, Olive, and, soon to be released, The Days When Birds Come Back. She launched her career as a writer a couple of decades ago, and her newest offering shares the story of two people, each navigating much grief and heartache and learning to be in the world in spite of tremendous loss. Hello, I'm Denise Kowalczyk, and welcome to the Between the Covers. I chatted with Deborah in the KBOO studios about her pursuit in becoming a writer. We dug into her unique approach to storytelling, and we talked about her new book, The Days When Birds Come Back, that's being released on January 9th. So let's talk a little bit about you.
Okay.
Where do you come from? Where are your people?
Oh, gosh. They are all over the place. I was born in Detroit, and my parents are all from the South, both sides of the family from the South, Georgia and West Virginia. So I grew up with a whole bunch of Southerners, lots of them, and moved to Florida as a teenager, and so spent a lot of time in the South. And then I've just lived everywhere. I moved to New York, lived in Germany for about 10 years.
How'd you get to Oregon?
Oregon. Oh,
and
gosh.
When? When was
yeah,
that?
I came to Oregon back in, it would have been the early 90s. Okay. My older son's father wanted to live here also, and we thought, we weren't together then, we thought it'd be a good place for us both to live and mm-hmm. raise, co-parent him, and that part didn't work out so well, but Oregon sure did, so it's been my home. I've lived in Oregon longer than I've lived anywhere in my life.
Okay, so yes. Do you consider it home?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're a professional writer, you get paid to write.
That's what
stories
they say.
And books and teach and such.
Yes.
When did you know
writing was as important as breathing to you?
Well, I moved around a lot as a child, so I went to 11 different elementary schools. So I'm not really sure at what point I learned to read or anything, math. Mm-hmm. That I have no memory of what school that was or any of my teachers, but I always checked out the library first thing, and so books were always a big deal to me. I also, since my family all comes from the South, they're big oral storytellers. Mm-hmm. So story has always been a big part of my life. But the first time I thought about writing at all was in 10th grade. I had taken a creative writing class, and my teacher, I wrote a short story, and it was the very first thing I'd ever written, and he gave me an A, and he wrote in the margin, "You could be a writer." And I thought, well, that's just crazy, and kind of thought he was a little bit nutty. Well, I come from a very working class family. There were no books around. I was the only person in my family that was reading, you know, novels and taking things out of the library, and nobody had gone to college, you know, so it was just an odd thought, mm-hmm. too far reaching for my 10th grade brain.
And yet here you are.
And yet here I am. I put it aside and I came back to it a bit later, but I kept journals along the way and wrote things in secret that I didn't really show anyone. Mm-hmm. And then after I had my second child, I thought it's now or never. It was an opportunity to be home with him as a baby, and I thought I'm going to go for this. And
so, is that when it became your day job?
20 well, years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's 20 now, almost 21.
Wow.
So 21 years ago. Yeah.
You know, I always admire people like you.
Oh dear.
No. I mean, you know, you have this creativity in you, and you're very talented at it.
Well, thank you.
And you get to do it, and I know it's not glamorous because it isn't like you, you know what I mean? You're in your room or wherever alone.
Pajamas with ratty hair every day.
And how do you manage that? I mean, for me, I work at a nonprofit, so I get up and I get ready and I go to that place and I have those people that I mm-hmm. work with, and then I go home.
Yeah.
So it's segmented, you know, and
yeah.
I mean, how do you do that as a writer?
Well, it takes a lot of discipline. For me, it does. It's a lot of self-discipline, but it also goes hand in hand with a compulsion. So that's sort of the easy route toward the writing, is that I get really agitated if I'm not writing and I'm not as easy to be around or happy in the world if I'm not getting work done. And I feel very satisfied after and exhausted after a long day of writing, but it gives me such a sense of purpose that to not do it feels vacant, and I just feel a bit lost without it.
Do you use pen to paper or computer?
No. In fact, my handwriting is just awful. Now, I literally can no longer write a story without my fingers tapping a keyboard. It's like all the circuitry to the brain.
Muscle memory.
It's connected right to the keyboard, and that's how I think, and I think quickly that way. Mm-hmm. If I try to do it by hand, I just sort of, my hand gets sore, then mm-hmm. I just give up.
This is a peculiar question, but I'm just going to ask it because we're talking about this topic. But if you're using a computer, mm-hmm. are you worrying about grammar and spelling and whatever as you're writing, or do you just and then afterwards kind of go through it and clean it up?
No, I'm not the writer that writes out, you know, the whole thing and then goes back and does rewrites like that. I do the rewrites as I'm writing, and the reason for that, I believe it is, at least for myself, is that it's the rhythm of the writing, that if I don't have that right, I can't really go on to the next sentence. It doesn't sit right with mm-hmm. me if it doesn't sound right. And so I'll sit and I'll read a sentence out loud and I'll read a paragraph out loud. And there's a certain tone and a certain note that I need to hit before I can go on. I mean, mm-hmm. sometimes I'll go on a little bit more, but I'll just keep coming back. So it's kind of like a three steps forward, two back every day. And no matter how much of a novel I have written, I start the day reading everything that I've already written, even if it's the 200 pages first before I get to that last 100. That's how I begin the day.
And you prime the pump that way.
It's exactly it. It puts me right back into that world, and I'm deeply immersed, and then it helps me to know what's going to come next.
Okay. I do have a question about when you're writing your stories or books, do you first come up with the characters and find the story, or is there this story and then you create the characters to help tell that story?
It depends on the book, but generally it's more of a notion. It's hard to explain this spark that happens that ignites that feeling of story coming alive. For example, my new book, The Days When Birds Come Back, I had just recently moved back to Oregon from Los Angeles for a couple of years, and I was renting a house that had been gutted, and I was the first person to live in the renovation. It was all beautifully done, and my neighbor told me one day about the man who had renovated it. She just kept saying what a great guy he was, and the two of them are friends, and how he had so much integrity and paid such close attention to the detail. And I can't explain to you why. I think it's a combination of that, knowing that story, and my own personal circumstances converged. And in that moment, I just felt like, oh, I need to go write something down. And that was the spark that led.
That's magic.
It is a kind of magic, and that's why it's difficult to explain. It's difficult to talk about. You don't really know where it comes from. It just appears.
And to be open to it, to pay attention to when it appears.
Right.
Now, I've read three of your books, and I'll recite the title. So I read the Carry Yourself Back to Me first, right?
Yeah.
Then I read Things We Set on Fire.
Yes.
And then I just read The Days When Birds Come Back, which we'll be talking about in just a few moments. Mm-hmm. And each of those characters are very unique and different, although there are some emotional themes in some of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, have you ever considered as a writer doing a series? Like, there was one character, whether it's June from this new book, where you're like, gosh, I'm not finished with her. I'd like to do something else with June and like do a series or anything like that.
The only time I've considered that is when I wrote a couple of thrillers under the pen name Audrey Braun. I wrote A Small Fortune and Fortune's Deadly Descent. And the Celia, the main character of the first one, A Small Fortune, struck me as someone who was so powerful and busy and had a way of moving through the world that led her into constant trouble. And it was more of a genre novel anyway, so it made it easier to think of it as a series. And I've thought that I would go back and write a third book, but I just haven't gotten around to doing that.
How much of you is in your characters? Whether it's the protagonist or, you know, others.
Well, I would say that there's an emotional depth that is me, but not necessarily me personally. Some of it is, but it's also my observations of others. Like the emotional intelligence of other people, the faults and the strengths, and but I've never really taken anyone's personal story and put that down. I just borrow from what I know in a sort of a sense of wisdom about other people's relationships and difficulties, their grief and their love. And
do you write out character development, or do you develop your characters as you're writing the story? I mean, do you have a framework for
they
them?
Sort of I write toward them. I'm not sure who they are until I put them into a place. And actually, for me, a sense of place is where I begin. When I know where the story takes place, then I have a stronger feeling about what the people would be like who live there and how the place it influences the way they feel about themselves and each other and things that they might be up against. Like in, you know, Carry Yourself Back to Me, it was in Florida, and the heat, the humidity, the crankiness, and the smells and all of those, the sensory details, to me, they begin to teach me who these characters are as they're moving through time and space.
Well, that comes out very clearly in the new book, The Days When Birds Come Back, because a central part of that is a renovation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's always there. That house or those houses are always there in the story, which is really interesting. And then I also, I couldn't remember if you did this in the other books, but I did notice in this one, you would talk in present moment, if you will, and then there was always going back. It was like,
yeah,
back and forth, back and forth. And it was a really fascinating journey to understand a character, to understand their story in the overall context of the story, and how many surprises. I was I didn't see that coming.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
The backstory, this story, this novel is about people who are really lost in the past. The past has a grip on them, which it does for many of us, most of us, I think. It's hard to let go of things that have hurt us in the past. And sometimes we're not even aware that these are the things that are holding us back until something cracks open and it's allowed to come up to the surface. So I really wanted these two main characters to meet in their grief and see what would happen if one could influence the other to open up and find out if they were able to let go of these things that were keeping them in place and to see if they could move forward. And it takes place on the Oregon coast. So the coast, which is where I live, plays a very big role in the novel, that sense of place. It really sets the tone, I think, for the melancholy lives that they live.
Well, I've been to that part of the coast, well, where you live and so forth and so on, and I believe it's a made-up town. Isn't that correct? Is that a real town?
Well, it's the name Nestucca Beach. Okay. I made up the name, but it's really Manzanita.
Okay.
For the most part, I changed a few things. You know, to fit the story. But it's really my town.
I was right there. I'm like, I was, and that's, for me, a telling. When I'm reading a story and I feel like I'm getting sucked into the pages of the story and I'm just like a fly on the wall or whatever the case may be, bearing witness to what these characters are going through. But I was reading it. I'm like, oh, that's not a real place. But it sure does sound like Manzanita. It feels like Manzanita. And I was curious to know if that's what you based it on.
Yeah, that's I did. Cool. It is Manzanita. I changed a few things that helped the story and the layout of the town and where the houses are located and that kind of thing. But I didn't want to name it Manzanita because it gets too sticky when you
then, is she talking about me?
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
So the title of this book comes from an Emily Dickinson poem.
Yes.
And I was hoping you could read that poem.
Oh, sure.
I have it here.
Yeah.
I have the book here, people. You can't see it on radio. But I'm wondering if you could just read it and then explain the significance as to why.
Well, it's just
It's a beautiful poem.
It's a portion of. There's more to it than what I have here. And then I'll explain it after. These are the days when birds come back, a very few, a bird or two, to take a backward look. These are the days when skies put on the old, old sophistries of June, a blue and gold mistake.
Beautiful.
And it is beautiful.
How did that come into your life? And
well, the poem, I've known the poem for many years, and it's about the time of year when what we used to call Indian summer. I don't know if it's still called that or not, but when we have these bursts of very warm weather and the birds have already started to go south, and it's confusing. It's confusing to the flowers. It's confusing to the birds. And the you know, it's the time when it's not really, it's not the right time to come back. But it looks like it. It looks like it. And that's the question in the novel, because June has returned back to the home that she grew up in. And Jameson has returned to the town where something very tragic happened to his children. And this is where they meet. And whether or not this is the right time for the two of them as individuals or mm-hmm. as a possible couple becomes the question of the novel.
You know, I found myself asking myself throughout reading this book if I liked June, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, can I see myself hanging out with June?
Yeah.
Which she... You know, she's a very peculiar gal.
Yes.
Jameson, I don't know if he reminds me of an ex-boyfriend by that name, but that's the visual I came up with.
The whiskey or the boyfriend?
The boyfriend.
Okay.
I could see him, too, and I'm like, oh, no, that's a person I could talk with. And I don't know mm-hmm. if it was because I conjured up some image of him based on some previous experiences or the way he was in the book. And it was interesting as you go through the story of them independent of one another in their individual stories, and then you just also show the crossover of them being in each other's lives and then yeah. where that leads them. I didn't expect the ending. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I'm glad.
I did not expect. I was hoping.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
I think they're going to take it.
Yeah, you know, June was more difficult for me to write mm-hmm. than Jameson was. And I think, you know, when June's dealing with alcoholism, and that's a difficult thing to struggle with, and she was a difficult person who's made a lot of mistakes in her life. And when I began writing these two characters, I knew that both of them were broken, but I didn't know at the onset what both of their tragic pasts mm-hmm. were. So as I began to uncover June's, it became more clearly to me that you know, she was dealing with many things from her past, but the current state of alcoholism is a whole different train wreck, yeah. you know, and people who are dealing with addiction, it can be very problematic. So I wanted her to be sympathetic in the way that she was at least interesting mm-hmm. to the reader. Not necessarily likable, but I also wanted to be able to explain to the reader how she got to be the kind of person that she is, and hopefully have the reader feel that even she's worth loving.
A little compassion.
Yeah.
A little compassion yeah. for her. Mm-hmm. And I did get to that point. I guess I was questioning, like, I didn't know enough about her. So, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like with Jameson, it was more of an open book kind of thing. I
yes.
don't know. With her, I was just like, I'm not, there's some stuff that I'm not knowing about her.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if I want
to
know.
Harder nut to crack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of secrecy too around alcoholism and addiction. And that was also part of, you know, as she becomes more self-aware, the reader learns more about
there you go.
Her as well.
You hit that nail on the head. Well done, my friend.
Thank you.
Also, as I was reading this book, it's called The Days When Birds Come Back, I didn't have my highlighter pen by my side as frequently as I wanted, because the way you put your sentences together or your thoughts, I'm just like, oh, my God, I love that. I love that. Oh. And there was this one that I did get to highlight. I want to read it. Just a few sentences, but mm-hmm. West was the direction of endings. I mean, I sat there and read that sentence over and over again. I highlighted it. And I'm like, it just hit really hard. And many of your sentences I found to be like that. It's just like I wanted
you,
to
Denise.
Read them over and over again.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Oh, you betcha. And I want you to read
okay.
a part.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I don't know exactly why
it just had to stay with me. And I'm like, you know what? I want Deborah to read this part out loud.
Okay.
It's starting right there, and it ends at that dot.
Okay. Oh, okay. Hours later, with the two black marks behind them, Jameson was washing dishes in the kitchen with Sarah Ann, the sun dipping orange behind the jagged white cascades, the only sounds the running faucet and, from the yard, a set of collared doves cawing their final bids on the day. Don Marshall up the road once mentioned that it was legal to shoot the birds year-round, an invasive species, he said, worse than pigeons. Jameson had made a point to say that they cooed just like mourning doves. Mostly they cooed all along like that, without the cawing, and Marshall said he didn't give a rat's ass if they knew how to whistle the Lord's Prayer. They didn't belong here, and he tilted his head and asked, did Jameson not understand the way a system of life worked? A system of life? Sarah Ann had asked when Jameson told her about it later. That's what he called it, Jameson said, and they acted like they didn't know what the neighbor meant, like he was just a funny old-timer, but they knew, and they knew they knew, and each was thinking of the system of life they'd set in place, where they did not speak about the past, and they did not express petty complaints, though every complaint was now petty, because nothing was worse than the death of one's children. The system of life got them out of bed, propped their bodies into upright positions, set their feet moving in the direction of the coffee maker, still alive, the children still gone, not still, again, gone again with every sunrise.
Oh, that's so sad.
I can't believe I'm getting upset about it.
It's a sad, there's a lot of sadness in the
You
book.
Can just feel the pain.
Yeah, there's a lot
in
of
that.
Pain.
Oh, so thank you for reading that.
Oh, thank you for, making me cry.
And that's just one part of this incredible book. And these characters, not just June and Jameson, all the others, even if they just make a brief appearance in this story, there's this rich awareness of who they are and that they all make sense in the story. When you finish a story, when you finish a book or what have you, how do you say goodbye to your characters?
Oh, well, now you're really going to make me cry. it's sad to let go of, you know, you spend years with these characters and they become so real to you as a writer. And you put them out into the world. It's a lot like a grown child, you know, that you let loose into the world and you just hope that everyone is going to be kind to it. And understand it the way that you would like it to be understood, but I miss them, and there is a process of mourning that takes place. I mean, and no joke. I mean, you grieve the loss of this entire world that you spend day after day, year after year, inside of, and it's just like all of a sudden someone comes along and then takes it, and now you have to go and start over again and make a whole new world with all new people, which is a little, it's exciting to do that, but there's definitely a sadness at the end of every book.
Deborah, thank you so much. Such a treat to once again talk with you.
Thank you so much, Denise. What a pleasure.
That was Deborah Reed, author of The Days When Birds Come Back. The book is being released on January 9th, and you can hear Deborah doing a reading of it that very same day at 7:30 p.m. at Powell's. To learn more about Deborah and her work, visit her website, www.deborahreedwriter.com. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Between the Covers. I'm Denise Kovalchuk. Have a great day.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rank in Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Are you bored or unsatisfied with your daily activities? Do you long for a new, exciting experience? If the answer is yes and you're under 21 just like me, then you should consider adding a once-a-week KBOO Youth Collective meeting to your schedule. Side effects will probably include extreme happiness, uncontrollable fits of laughter, a great group of new friends, and yummy snacks. KBOO Youth Collective can cause sudden bouts of inspiration and a yearning to share your words or your inner thoughts with the local community. If joining the collective sounds like a cure for your boredom and lack of an extraordinary after-school activity, then write us at youth@kboo.org or visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, or come into one of our Wednesday meetings for a scare-free, risk-free, and always cost-free trial.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to the film show on KBOO.